This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:07 and this is Top 5 at 5 with Lynn and Sharad, where we count down to the biggest story of the day.
Number 5.
Questions have been raised about the jail sentence for an old man who stole a can of sardines.
Right. So the former deputy public prosecutor, Samantha Chong, has raised concerns about sentencing practices following a case last week where a 64-year-old security guard was convicted of stealing sardines, mouthwash and coffee powder from a convenience store. He was sentenced to 1 month in jail.
So Samantha wrote about this on X and said that there were already provisions that would have allowed him to be sentenced to community service rather than this 1 month in jail. And she pointed out that it's not only costly for the government, imprisonment, but is not actually commensurate with the crime.
Right. So the security guard had appealed to the court for leniency as he still is supporting his children. Clearly, it was not granted. Now, reflecting on the case, Samantha has called for sentencing guidelines similar to those in the UK.
So all of this, I think there's a blend here of human interest, but also of the law and what it says. So we reached out to advocate and solicitor Andrew Koo to weigh in on this issue of a custodial sentence for a minor crime.
Reading the case report that I was referred to, I think the first problem with this case is the fact that the accused was not legally represented or does not appear to have been legally represented. I think it's really not the correct procedure for courts to continue to hear cases and to hand down sentences when the accused person is not represented. Because in this case, for example, there could have been legal representation as to why a 1 month custodial sentence would not have been appropriate under the circumstances. This is an elderly senior citizen, of course, who has a family to take care of. Who would take care of them if he was sent to jail for a month? Wouldn't that just impose further burdens on the family? So I think a court should not have granted a custodial sentence.
Andrew also says alternative provisions make more sense.
I agree with other comments that have been made that there are far more appropriate and proportionate sentences that could have been handed down by the court in this case, and certainly an order for community service would have meant that the accused person, the convicted person, would have been able to on the one hand serve his sentence but yet not have to be separated from his family and his community. So you also have to look at justice of the case. So when it comes to sentencing, I think there are a few lessons here that we need to learn. One is, the main thing is to make sure that there is legal representation for all persons accused, and there shouldn't be sentencing prior to an appreciation of the accused person's domestic situation. And secondly, yes, sentencing guidelines and certainly proportional. I mean, look at the amount that was involved and really whether 1 month custodial sentence was really the appropriate sentence to hand down.
That was advocate and solicitor Andrew Koo. And I think it was very helpful, I think, to hear Andrew frame that out, partly because for most of us, I believe there would be an instinctive reaction to asking exactly that, right? What is the question of justice when it comes to talking about somebody who's supporting his family, who hasn't exactly stolen? It would appear that these are everyday items that were in need, that he was in need of.
Absolutely. And, you know, today we are talking, the whole country is gripped with this discussion of the former prime minister, you know, and bid for him to have, house arrest.
Yeah,
right?
When you make the comparison, it's very difficult.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So here you have, you know, I mean, do we want to become a society where the rich and the well-known are the objects of a lot of compassion outpouring for, you know, sort of mitigation, whereas the poor and the unrepresented in this case, you know, get the book thrown at them and get the harshest of sentences? And I think that is something that also is sort of in the subtext of the story that needs to be considered.
Let us know if you have thoughts. Again, there have been calls for, I think, different sorts of ideas around sentencing for for a 64-year-old man who stole sardines, mouthwash and coffee powder from a convenience store. So for that, he got a month in jail. What do you make of this? You can call 7733-2900, send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Number four.
Continuing the countdown on Top 5 at 5, a picket in Perak for collective agreement.
Yeah, so about 100 employees of an integrated cement plant company called Tasik Corporation picketed outside the company's factory in Perak yesterday. Now, this is somewhat rare as a kind of thing in Malaysia, industrial action, but it happened because the company rejected a new proposed collective agreement. The old collective agreement had lapsed in June 2022.
So, P. Damodaran, Secretary General of the Cement Industry Employees Union, said that talks with the management failed because only 33 of the 44 proposed articles were accepted by the company. And those 11 articles that didn't make it through were rejected because the company said it was not financially viable.
Right. And according to Damodaran, these 11 articles comprise medical benefits, remuneration for staff and more. And in addition, the union had also asked for maternity leave, housing allowance and minimum wage. And I wonder, how did they go all these years without something like maternity leave, housing and the minimum wage?
Yeah, so it's quite clear that the 11 articles left behind are of great import, right? It's not as if we're talking about mini small things. Now, under the mediation of the Perak Human Resources Health Indian Community Affairs and National Integration Committee Chairman A. Sivanesan, the management agreed to resume discussions with the union, who then agreed to stop picketing, and both parties have been given 2 weeks to resolve this issue.
So we reached out to Jay Solomon, the Secretary General of the National Union of Bank Employees, for comment.
It is important that the bargaining process at the cement factory should go ahead in good faith without any delay. Collective bargaining also provides the basis to build sound and constructive labour relations at the workplace. My view is that the management should stop any delayed tactics to prolong the process. Such action only results in conflict and it is counterproductive. Issues on the bargaining agenda include, like wages, working time, training, occupational health and safety, and equal treatment. It's also important for national developmental. It provides a platform for the equal distribution of wealth in a society. Like most Scandinavian countries, which have high levels of unionization and where collective bargaining is commonly practiced, there are not many people who are very rich or very poor. It's a fundamental right. It is rooted in the International Labour Organization Constitution.
That was Jay Solomon, the Secretary General of the National Union of Bank Employees, weighing in on a picket that took place in a company in Perak, where they're asking for essentially a collective agreement, a new collective agreement. If you have thoughts that you'd like to share, that number to call is 7733-2900. Send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll continue our countdown to the top story of the day on Top 5 at 5 after this. Keep it here on BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It's 5:16 and this is Top 5 at 5 with Lynn and Sherrod, where we count down to the biggest story of the day. We started things off at story 5 with the controversial sentencing of an elderly man for what amounts to petty theft, really. And story 4 about a picket in Perak.
Number 3.
This is an interesting one. Mass hysteria erupted in a secondary school.
Right, so 50 students from SMK Batu Kikir in Negeri Sembilan were part of an outbreak of mass hysteria yesterday. Reportedly, this isn't the first time the school has had an incident of hysteria. A similar case had occurred back in 2019, according to Jempol MP, Dr. Shamsul Kaha, Muhammad Deli. The rest of the 165 students were asked to go home.
So perhaps it's helpful to paint a picture of what went on. So parents were told to pick up their children so that recovery treatment could be done in the vacant dormitories. And one of the parents gave a first-hand account of the situation, saying that as she was getting her children in the evening, she heard the screams of both male and female students. And her children said that they hadn't experienced something like this since staying at the dorms in the last 2.5 years.
But what exactly is hysteria and how does it happen? So we reached out to Dr. Robert Bartholomew, a medical sociologist psychologist who specializes in studying mass hysteria.
What typically happens when you look at school cases, so every case is triggered by stress. And the type of case that you're looking at there is triggered by long-term stress, right? Stress that goes on for weeks or months. When that happens, the nerves and the neurons that send messages to the brain get garbled, and you get twitching, shaking, altered states of consciousness, fits of screaming and yelling, super strength where they have to hold people down. Subscribe to that. When you look at these cases in greater depth, what you generally find is there's something going on at the school. Something is amiss. There's some tension going on between maybe it's teachers and students. Oftentimes, there is tension over the workload, like they feel like they're being worked too hard, too much work, not enough play.
Robert also noted something unusual about this case.
Well, what's unusual here is that you have 50 students out of 165, so about a third of the school, but 19 of them are male and 31 are female. That's unusual for cases in Malaysia historically, which tells me whatever tension is going on at the school, whatever dispute behind the scenes that's generating this anxiety involves males as well. So the key here to understand this episode and to stop it from continuing is to understand what is the underlying stressor. What is the anxiety that triggered this case? And that is the key to resolving this case and not having it continuing on or spread to other schools, which is a real possibility.
So we also asked Robert, why does hysteria happen so much in this part of the world?
Well, you know, it's not just Malaysia. And it happens in Malawi, in Southern Africa. But, you know, the funny thing is, it tends to be in the strictest Christian schools where students feel all work and no play. I don't think Malaysia should look at themselves as, oh, it makes us look backwards. It's just, it's something that happens. It's part of the culture, but it happens in Malawi. It happens in Kenya. There's quite a few cases in Kenya. There's a lot of cases in South Africa. Where does it happen in South Africa? In the strictest religious schools, just like in Malawi. And where does it happen in Malaysia? It tends to happen in the strictest Islamic schools and in typically the boarding schools.
That was Dr. Robert Bartholomew, a medical sociologist who specializes in studying mass hysteria.
If you have thoughts on the story or actually experiences with this potentially that you'd like to share of mass hysteria, because there are incidents that have happened before here in our country, that number to call, 7733 2900, send a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Number two.
All right. So, again, a story that has proven to capture a lot of people's imaginations. Two Malaysian Navy helicopters collided in mid-air during a rehearsal for a parade. And sadly, all 10 crew members on board were killed.
Yeah, in fact, the story is now on many major international media platforms too, partly because of the video of the rehearsal and the mid-air collision going viral. Now, just to give a sense of what happened, it occurred at the Lumut Naval Base in Perak at about 9:30 a.m. this morning. The video that went viral shows several helicopters flying in formation until one of the aircraft's rotors hits another, causing both to crash. Local police confirmed the footage was genuine, and Malaysia's Navy said it would carry out investigations into the cause of the accident.
So, for what we know so far, the Defence Minister, Mohamed Khalid Nordin, said that the two aircraft were rehearsing for a parade that would have been a celebration of the Royal Malaysian Navy's 90th anniversary. That is supposed to happen this Saturday. And efforts are now underway to verify the identities of the crew members who were killed, all of whom were below the age of 40. And this is really a very tragic story. And I think whenever things happen that involve aviation, that involve planes and helicopters, there tends to be a certain kind of, understandably, a certain a lot of questions around what happened, but also what do we know about the machinery? What do we know about training? You know, these are the kinds of questions that tend to come up.
Yeah, so one thing to note, I mean, the Prime Minister has already weighed in, calling it quite tragic. I think that the chatter, and I don't know how to take this chatter and how seriously to take this chatter, Lynn, which a lot of people are asking or saying, well, you know, should helicopters even be involved in this kind of formation, display, mm-hmm. that there's something about helicopters. And what you would notice if you watch the video is that the formation there, it's very typical of what you see with the flyby kind of shows that
sure.
planes do, right? They come through and then they break away, and that is a wonderful formation. It's sort of spectacle if done correctly. The question was this appropriate to use helicopters and such? And we didn't have a chance to reach out to an aviation expert on this. And I think maybe in the following days, we'll get more information as to what went wrong.
Again, if you would like to weigh in on this, that number to call is 7733 2900. That number to send a voice note or WhatsApp is 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Going back to the first story that we covered today, story 5, we were talking about the jail sentence that has been meted out for an old man who stole, among other things, a can of sardines. So a small number of items, sort of not anything that amounts to great value, but 1 month jail. And so there have been questions raised about this, whether or not it should have been looked at differently, whether or not things like community service should have been considered. And we were asking you for your thoughts. We do have a voice note on this. Here is Ravi Kumar.
A guy who steals, what, less than 50 ringgit, 40 ringgit, gets the full brunt of the law, where else people who get away with millions and hundreds of millions and perhaps billions, talking about, you know, reduced sentencing, poor thing, he has done this, he has done that, they have done this, that. You know, this shows one thing for sure. This basically shows that the 64-year-old man are one of those who actually have fallen through the cracks. Where is the government agencies, right, who are supposed to help these sort of people, right? You know, we're talking about reducing hardcore poor. It's all, I think, a shock sindiri sort of feeling. Really shock sindiri, yeah, some of these people. Yet, we hear many times, there are people who are not doing very well. These people really need help.
Ravi, thank you for that. I think what I'm getting, you know, that sense of outrage really matches how a lot of people feel about the story. Because you're right, if you do the math, if you just kind of compare case to case, if we talk about the amount, you're right, 50 ringgit, 40 ringgit, because what is this really? So you compare that to millions and billions. Then if you do the other thing and you talk about age, then I think, again, we're finding ourselves talking about two people who are older, and therefore you would have similar sorts of worries, right? You'd be worrying about their health, you'd be worrying about their families, and yet this is what we find. And there is a kind of a fundamental, like I said, a knee-jerk reaction, at least even from me, to say, how does this work?
Yeah, but you know, I do know that there are people who say, you know, a crime is a crime and you have to be punished, right?
Sure.
But the question is, and this is what I think Samantha Chong, the former DPP, raised, right? Is our sentencing practice, or our sentencing practice by our courts, consistent, right? So are all judges basically aligned so that, you know, when the sentencings are fair across the board? I think there is also the question of the punishment must be commensurate with the crime. This is the, you know, what Ravi, you point out, right? How much money did he steal? Yes, he stole and it's bad and he needs to, he needs to pay for that. But then the question is, how much do you pay when you've taken 50 ringgit? You know, and what benefit does society get by this custodial sentence?
So Nini says, what about house detention? Do we need prison? Petty thefts and house break-ins are getting very rampant nowadays. Why is it so? Are we heading towards lawlessness? Then what is the judiciary system for?
Yeah, Nene, I guess I don't know if you mean to say that people should be given, harsh detentions.
Yeah,
I think what you're getting at is harsh sentence. I mean, yes, I think this is it, right? So sometimes, and I know politicians do love to do this. They play to the law and order problem by, pressing that button about our fears about lawlessness. I mean, I don't know if Malaysia could be considered lawless on a global scale.
Sure. I think also maybe it's important to make a distinction between what we're talking about, this particular case, and I think drawing, because we have a tendency to do this, right, in general. It's why any conversation about, say, something like the death penalty inevitably becomes about drugs, because we go immediately to that kind of example. And similarly, talking about somebody who lifted some everyday essentials from a convenience store suddenly becomes about home break-ins. And I don't think that we need to necessarily make those comparisons, partly because they're just not the same thing, I think.
Yeah, and also I think the point that Samantha Chong was making is that in our, in our system of justice, we need to have consistency. And that's what she was looking at. Guidelines for sentencing, and so that all judges and magistrates are on the same page.
Keep those thoughts coming. Whether it is about, let me run this through, whether it is about sentencing for an elderly man who stole, among other things, a can of sardines, picketing in Perak, and what that tells us about the power of collective bargaining, mass hysteria in a school in Jempol, and the helicopter crash that sadly claimed the lives of the people on board. You can call, you can send us a voice note or WhatsApp, as well as tweet us at BFM Radio.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It's 5:38 and you're listening to Top 5 at 5 with Lynn and Sherrod, where we count down to the biggest story of the day. So story 5 was the case of a man who was sentenced to a month in jail for stealing sardines. Story 4, the picket that took place in Perak. Story 3, mass hysteria in a secondary school. Story 2, the helicopter crash that killed 10 people today. And we have, of course, been asking you for your thoughts on all of this. And by far, I think the thing that most people have been weighing in on has been the subject of the 1 month sentencing for stealing sardines, mouthwash. I'm trying to remember what else it was. In essence, they were not high value items. Sardines, mouthwash, coffee powder. So we've been asking you for your thoughts, and we've got, let's see, a bunch of thoughts. Let's start with a voice note from Mark.
Hi guys, so good evening. I think regarding the topic on the senior citizen that was sentenced to 1 month in jail, yeah, I'm not a law graduate, neither am I a lawyer or anything like that. I'm a technical person. But I think sometimes what the court goes through is not just the law that they have to, that the citizens have to abide, you know. In court itself, I think what plays a role is the person's attitude towards the sentence or the accused, what the accused is going through. I don't think it's purely based on just these sentences. I think it's also how the person's body language in court and all that. I think that plays a role as well. But nevertheless, this sentence for a senior citizen who has dependence on him, I think it's rather, it's a bit harsh, if you ask me, for a can of sardines, mouthwash, and what was the other thing again? I think, yeah, like the other voice note said, that, you know, it's less than 50 ringgit, you know. So I think it's not about really purely about the value of the actual crime. I think it boils down to rather the accused's attitude.
Mark, thank you for those thoughts.
Yeah, I think, you know, Mark, you're probably right about, say, questions of remorse, right? So if you're remorseful and you think you've done wrong.
A show of remorse.
A show of remorse, yeah. Right? So if, say, you stole 2.6 billion and then you show no remorse and you don't apologise to the nation, do you deserve
Who are you talking about, Sherrod?
I don't know.
I'm just mystery person.
Hypothetical, Lynn. It's a hypothetical. If you don't show any remorse for what you've done and saddled future generations with, should you get a reduction in your jail sentence? Should you get house arrest?
Yes. So I think that this is the problem again. Once we open this can of worms of sardines, as it were, it's impossible to kind of put it back in. Noorhan says, it's not the judge's fault. The storekeeper who pressed charges should be blamed for lack of sympathy. Once a police report is made, the legislation process will take place. So I think, to be clear, nobody is saying fault in the case of sentencing, because discretion, right? People have discretion. Judges have discretion. But what we're talking about here, just to be clear, let's say legislation process takes place. I think what the person who's kind of pointed out all of this, Samantha Chong, what she's been pointing out is even within the law, there is room for community service. So the 1 month was not mandatory. So I think that is the point. So if we're going to be talking about even a process taking place, within that process, there are still choices that can be made.
Yeah, I kind of slightly disagree, because I think the shopkeeper is probably within their rights to make a complaint. A crime has been committed. Should they have showed compassion? Maybe. But the point is, actually, in the judicial process, not only is there, can there be compassion, especially if the accused shows remorse, if the nature of the crime is very minor. In this case, you know, somebody has pointed out it's probably less than 50 ringgit that was stolen. Then the sentence should be commensurate. It should be equal to the nature of the crime. And I think also what Samantha is saying is consistency. Consistency across judges. So it's not just like you have one very compassionate judge and one very strict judge. You want consistency.
Keep those thoughts coming. We do have more on this, but I would also like to move on to our top story of the day, which we will come back to after this. If you'd like to weigh in, whether it's on the sentencing of 1 month jail for a man who stole sardines, mouthwash, coffee powder, let us know. Mass hysteria also, we actually have a story shared on that, which we will come back to. Do keep those thoughts coming. You can send us a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It's 5:44 and you're listening to Top 5 at 5 with Lynn and Sharad, where we count down to the biggest headline of the day, which is where we have arrived.
Number one.
Activists are pushing back on the exploration project at the Langkasuka Basin.
Yeah, so for people who don't quite know where that is,
what's
even happening is that it's somewhere between Penang and Langkawi. It is a huge area that has now been earmarked for oil and gas exploration. It might bring money into the Malaysian government's coffers, but there are consequences, mostly of which are environmental.
And that's what we are exploring, because joining us now, we have Hamiza Shamsuddin, climate and energy campaigner at Greenpeace Malaysia. Hamiza, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Hello, hi, thank you. Thank you for having us, Lynn and Sharad.
So firstly, your organisation, along with Rimba Watch, have issued a statement pushing back against the exploration project at the Langkasuka Basin. Could you help us understand what the project involves and why it's a threat to the marine ecosystem?
Okay, just to put it in easier form, is that Petronas has announced that by somewhere around November last year, that they are looking into oil and gas exploration within the Strait of Malacca. And what they have seen is that on the northern side of the Strait of Malacca, which is Langkasuka Basin, they found that there was two plots of undiscovered of hydrocarbon. And they are currently doing a seismic survey on these two plots. The problem is that the issue over here is that at that particular area is actually compromised of a diverse marine ecosystem. To name a few, is like the mangrove is there, we have a coral reef is there, and then we have rocky shore. So we have this kind of ecosystem over there that has not been touched. And having this exploration over there will bring a bigger risk towards that ecosystem.
So on the face of it, there seems to be a contradiction in sort of government saying they're planning for an energy transition away from fossil fuels. And now we hear that, you know, something central to the government, especially in terms of its revenue, is an expansion of oil and gas exploration. Is there a contradiction?
Okay, if we are looking into the latest roadmap, the National Energy Transition Roadmap that was published somewhere around August last year, this kind of this kind of project is not shocking for us to listen from the government, because in the NETR, the government have said that they are looking into expanding the dependency on natural gas. However, if why they are looking to increasing the dependence on natural gas is because they are saying that natural gas is, it could be a transition and energy for the energy transition. It's help in terms of the energy security. However, if we are looking on natural gas as a transition energy, we will look into, we will actually face this kind of projects that will affect the environment and as well as local community.
So talk to us about how this project isn't consistent with our mitigation plans.
Okay, so when it comes to the mitigation plan, if it's the NETR, which is the roadmap, the energy transition roadmap, it's probably, we are not saying that it's contradiction. However, as what this is what Greenpeace Malaysia believe, as well as most of the civil society organization in Malaysia, we believe that to have a just energy transition, which is a giving justice to the energy transition, we should look for enhancing the potential towards a direct transition towards renewable energy. And we should reduce the reliance towards the fossil fuel. This is where we don't see that the NETR is something that we should go for. That's where we find more errors in the mitigation plan itself. Because what we are seeing that, for example, on renewable energy, in Malaysia itself, we have the energy such as solar energy, where it's already there in Malaysia. We do have the facilities, we do have the infrastructure, which the grid system that needs to be improved. We do have the manufacturing plant that is based here. However, this the solar panel will be exported to other countries, and we do have the system over here. And what we are not saying is that there's not much of systemic investment towards this kind of technology. And basically, the government are still pushing on the narrative that we still need to rely on fossil fuel. This is something that we don't agree on.
Now, I understand it's still in early stages, as you said, is a seismic survey that's being done now. But say that this oil and gas exploration project goes full steam ahead. What environmentalists are pointing to is the risk of oil spills. Can you talk to us about how these spills happen and what kind of impact it might have on marine biodiversity?
Okay, as we know, the Strait of Malacca, we can see that it's we know that it's one of the busy area. Like when it comes to shipping area, when we have this kind of plant or like a offshore plant built over there, this will increase, I mean, in terms of the exploration, building up the plant there, it's already going to face, we do listen to oil spill issue that's coming up from all other offshore plant before this. So it's easily that we know that there's going to be an issue of oil spill once we have a plant over there. And then this is also a busy area. This also increase more. So what in easily to be said is that having this kind of activity over there will basically will be increasing and damaging to that particular area. That we are going to solve the issue of having energy security, but then we are creating more risk and damaging to our environment.
Considering the shipping traffic in that part of the Straits of Malacca, is the threat from of oil spills from exploration greater than that, say, coming from ships?
So, like what we are saying that if we are looking into like a very basic, we are just looking into it, this, the risk of having the exploration is much more higher because it's a continuous activity, whereby the shipping activity might be there might be some, like it might happen in like a certain peak hours, that we might have that risk. But having a plant, an offshore plant there, it actually increase and makes it much more bigger risk because it's the activity has been done 24/7. Yeah.
Hamza, can I ask you if there's sufficient transparency in the planning of this project? I mean, what kind of information is available or being held back from public scrutiny, especially from stakeholders like fishing communities or those in the tourism industry and environmentalists like yourself?
Okay, unfortunately, when it comes to this kind of projects, we don't see much of transparency. We do hear that the government are monitoring it. We do hear that the corporation are saying that, okay, we will come up with this this kind of project and we are looking into this kind of project. However, that's not much of access as well as transparency when it comes to the project itself. Like this is where we as CSO and also normal people, we don't really have much of trust when it comes to this kind of projects because we are not sure where is it actually at, what kind of risk and what are the steps that they are taking when they are conducting these particular projects because we are not able to see it. So it's currently is quite, in terms of transparency, it's quite lacking.
Hamiza, any final thoughts for us?
So yeah, I mean, when it comes to it, like, I'm just saying it back. Like when it comes to just energy transition, it's something that we need to look into. Like we should actually enhance the potential of going towards renewable energy such as solar, and also we should have approaches such as energy efficiency to help it out. It's highly time that we have to push for this kind of we have to emphasize on the society and also environmental risk rather than looking into the economic aspect of it. I mean, we could have reliance on natural gas. However, having natural gas as a transition energy, it will bring more damaging towards our environment. And if we are saying about energy transition, it's about helping out to reduce the carbon emission. It's about to improve the environmental issue that is here in Malaysia. But if we are still relying on the bigger villain, which is fossil fuel, we don't see the potential of us having a success energy transition by 2050. If the government are not pushing on having a systemic investment on the right technology, which is the renewable energy and also energy efficiency. Yeah.
Hamiza, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Okay, thank you.
That was Hamiza Shamsuddin, climate and energy campaigner at Greenpeace Malaysia, talking about the pushback against the exploration project at the Langkasuka Basin. If you'd like to weigh in, you can send us a voice note or WhatsApp. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. If we head back to the messages about the show as a whole, broadly, people have a lot of thoughts on the 1 month jail sentence for a man who stole some sundry items at a convenience store. But we also have Legion weighing in on mass hysteria, saying, I remember an incident of mass hysteria in my secondary school. I witnessed girls my age screaming and suddenly falling. My teacher, who was a Christian, was so disturbed, she brought a Bible to class.
Yeah, Legion, that's very interesting because you point to one of the kind of popular interpretations of mass hysteria.
Yes.
that is popular and historical,
actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is at variance from, say, the interpretation our guests gave, which has got to do with social pressures, with, you know, constraints in that institution you're working in. It's a more psychological and mental health issue, but often it's turned into something, well, something paranormal is often attributed to the incidence of mass hysteria.
We've also, going back to the point about the jail sentence, got a lot of thoughts on it. Both Sarjit and Michelle basically trying to do some comparative math, saying if stealing 2.6 billion gets you 4 years in jail, then say 10 cans of sardines, 80 ringgit, should get you, what, you know, 6 seconds of jail time if you compare. So things like that are coming through. However, Fez says, I believe the decision is correct. Stealing is wrong. Justice is served. We're not in America where they allow shoplifting.
Oh, I didn't know they allowed shoplifting in the America Fairs. But yes, I think the decision, I mean, I think the fact that the man was convicted was probably true. I mean, if he did commit the crime. The question is, what is the role of compassion? And then the social understanding of the courts, right? If somebody, why put somebody in jail when they're overcrowded? And it might not serve the purposes of government actually to do that.
We've also got similarly on this, Daniel weighing in.
Hi, BFM again. Good evening. I think if you do the crime, you do the time. But perhaps 1 month is a bit too long for this case. And, well, like the other listener mentioned, this person has fallen through the cracks. And why? Well, because of massive corruption in this country. And the government didn't take care of society. And therefore, society, like this poor man, has fallen through the crack. And this is where we are today. But in order to have rule of law, well, if you do the crime, you have to do the time. The only thing is it 1 month or is it 3 days or is it a week? And likewise, those who stole billions should not be given any discount. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Daniel. So I think 1 month, it is an important kind of measure, partly because we are talking about somebody who still has dependents. And so you're right, Daniel, in pointing out that the difference between, say, a week or 3 days away from work versus a month is actually very large when we're talking about somebody's earnings.
Yeah, and also I think there's no doubt that you pay for your crime.
Yeah.
But the question is how much? And this is what the activist is pointing to. Is this necessary? When community service is also time, but it's a very different type of punishment.
And is provided within the law. So it's not necessarily asking for some major change. It's not even a reform, actually. It's just it exists. So why in this case didn't it happen? So that's really the question. Keep those thoughts coming. And you can send us a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.